I consider living language to be a sensory full body experience with a word. We've all had it. We've all read a great line that gave us full body chills. We've all read a great line that just slayed us inside. And this is just a deeper experience with a word that leads to unit of consciousness.
Hello, I'm Julie Kroll. You're listening to the Dr. Julie Show, All Things Connected. Each week we gather right here to make connections that break through the illusion of separation. Welcome. Your journey of conscious evolution continues right here, right now. I had a new experience recently. I was moderating an in-person three-day event when I noticed what I would used to consider channeling shifted and evolved into a direct co-creative process with higher intelligence. The process was responsive to the field and the individual participants that were present. It was an active, energetic presence that was designing a larger, holistic experience. I was simply the conduit. It was delightful and liberating as I watched the process transmute density and realign the frequencies. Many of my clients are reporting these new kinds of capacities coming online, from direct communication with nature to seeing puzzles and games come to life in multidimensional layers and steps, from hearing beautiful music coming from the plants in a garden to instantaneously reimagining whole systems and structures in new, never-before-seen ways. If I could describe what I'm learning in simple terms, it is that we're becoming aware of consciousness interacting with the environment and the world around us. With embodied, unitive consciousness living in the quantum realm, what used to look like a miracle is becoming everyday occurrences for many. Our guest today says the boundary between her and the external world has dissolved. Welcome to Season 2 of Main Street Mystics, where co-host Dr. Paul J. Mills and I are ready to go deeper, wider, and farther. What are the new structures, abilities, understanding, and ways of being? What are the emerging innate and evolutionary capacities? And how do we navigate and transcend to the next level of functioning? Today, we're going to invite you to surrender to the power of words and perhaps share an encounter with living language. I invite you to take a few conscious breaths, bring your awareness to your heart, open your mind, and settle into your essential wholeness as I introduce my co-host and guest. Dr. Paul J. Mills is professor of public health and family medicine at the University of California, San Diego. He has expertise in the fields of cardiology, psychoneuroimmunology, behavioral medicine, and integrative health. He's the author of the award-winning book, Science, Being and Becoming, The Spiritual Lives of Scientists. And Paul, I'm going to introduce our guest, but I just want to say hi. And I just love doing this series with you. And every time I'm preparing for season two, I just get more and more excited because the breadth and depth of what we're going to explore is so exciting. How are you doing today?
Thanks, Julie. I'm doing well. And I've been feeling the same way. I feel season two, we're being released out of the gate, so to speak. There's much more on the table, many more possibilities, more horizons that we'll be exploring than we did in season one.
Oh, thank you. I'm excited. So let's bring on Dr. Christine O'Donnell. She is a psychologist, author of two books, and spiritual teacher who studied Eastern traditions and the shamanic energy practices of Caro Indians of Peru for nearly three decades. I stumbled back there because I wanted to say award-winning author, and her bio doesn't say that. So I'm going to pause and say award-winning author. Her first book won multiple awards. So there, we presence that. And she is the founding director of Winds of Change Association, a Minneapolis-based educational organization offering programs that cultivate humanity's evolving consciousness. I bet our listeners are all out there going, yes, I want to learn more about what this organization is as well. So welcome to our show, Christina.
Thank you, Julie. And thank you, Paul. And more importantly, thank you for both being lanterns that are lighting the path to unity consciousness and awakening in our world, because the time is now. The soil is fertile and the tributaries, small tributaries, are starting to come together. So it's exciting to be with you today.
Thank you. I love how you said that, Christina. That was beautiful. I do have a first question for you because I want to just dig in, and it seems like really direct. I'm going to say, what is this? What is this? What is this? But I want to read your words as I ask you, what is living language and illuminations that you write about? You wrote, I saw that the illuminations, which revealed their significance solely through somatic sensory receptors below the level of consciousness, were leading me to experience the source from which words rise and return, resulting in a progressive attunement with the greater universe. And I want to pause here because there seems to be this theme I'm hearing from others, and I think Paul is too, our last guest was that way, that this theme is this progressive attunement, a multidimensional training or teaching over time.
Yes.
So first, share with us what are illuminations in, from your point of view, and what is this living language that you write about? And then we'll look deeper into this process.
Well, beautiful. That is a loaded first question. So what are illuminations? What I call illuminations. I've had a mystical temperament from the day I was born. I have over a half decade of what I call transcendent dreaming, which is a form of lucid dreaming, where in the dreaming itself, you're participatory in the experience. The unseen is coming into the dream and it actually manifests in the physical world. So you see the mysticism there in being a midwife of the unseen into the seen. And I do believe some of us were simply born to be that in the world. The illuminations are a progression of that. No longer sleeping. I had to be knocked out. All of us as PhDs know we have a good conceptual mind, and it had to go to rest in order for these mystical experiences to come through. With illuminations, they come from an outside source. They're unexpected. They're startling. They almost always happen when my conceptual mind is quiet, but then they invade. And when they invade, they always come with heightened sensation. So the sensory system, heightened sensation. There's an increased lucidity as though someone has just turned on a light bulb. And my conceptual mind recedes. And then I receive what I call the sound underneath the sound, where I experience, and as I say in living language, 92 illuminations that seem to have had a governing aim, this progressive movement of the sensory system being attuned to receive living language, the spoken, the written word. It didn't matter. It could be written or spoken. And in those moments occasioned by language, it was always as though the thousand roots underneath one word would return to the silence, and I could be in the forces or the archetypal energies that were behind the word, which would then connect to the greater whole, of which then I was participatory in a unitive field. And that is what this book is about. And I consider living language to be a sensory full body experience with the word. We've all had it. We've all read a great line that gave us full body chills. We've all read a great line that just slayed us inside. We've all read a great line where the hair goes up on the back of our neck. And this is just a deeper experience with the word that leads to unit of consciousness. And I might even say, if there's time in the interview, because I love that you're here, Paul, I think it's awakening the quantum field in our cellular body. And who knew? Who knew the word could bring us here? And of course the word can bring us here, because in the beginning was the word. But in the beginning was the silence, and then there was the word.
Yeah, I so appreciate your description just then. And it leads me to a new question, which I'll ask first and then come to my others later. As you were describing that, I can't help but wonder if you're, so in your book, you describe you enter into the conversations amongst people different. They could be on this side of the world, that side of the world. If you enter into a conversation where people are speaking a language such as Sanskrit, which, as I understand, is considered a language more at the fundamental root of connecting what we consider the name of an object and its vibration. Is your qualitative or quantitative experience different, that transfiguration phenomenon you would describe of your perception and feeling forces of evolution? Is that different if you happen to stumble upon some group speaking Sanskrit versus this language, etc.?
Yes, as I get full body chills as you ask that question, I think there are languages on the planet, Sanskrit being one of them, and actually Quechua, the Kiro Indians with whom I've studied for 30 years, their language is very close to Sanskrit. And so a lot of the vibratory sound of the word is connected to the earth and to the whole. And I do think they are closer. And yet I also write about in my book that my great friend, Michael Spite, who was a personal attendant of Maharishi, who, you know, that led the transcendental meditation here in the West. He sent me an audio that was 19 minutes by Maharishi, an interview. And someone asked him, any word can bring you, if you can get beyond the meaning of the word and you can have an experience with the word, it can bring you to the unbounded whole, to the eternal whole. And, you know, Maharishi's got that innocence and childlikeness, like, yes, yes. And then they're like, any language, any word? And he's like, yes, yes, of course. Any language, any word.
Christina, that the unbounded part, I loved your book, by the way. Admire your use of words, of language. It's so poetic. It's just this yummy experience of how you describe all of these different events and as they're happening, and you do a beautiful job. When I really got what you were saying, there were two quotes with descriptions of words here that I thought, I'm just going to read both of them, just they're real brief. The first one was, I have an inkling words may be virtual cups of light, giving us capabilities to experience other times, places, and states of being, then ultimately becoming chalices of inner awareness. Mm-hmm. And when I read that, I'm like, ah, now I'm really getting what she's trying to share with us in the book. And then here's the second one. I realize the emptiness is not a vacuum, but rather energy without a center, so that what comes from within it, the eternal, may be incarnated through me in time. Mm. And when I put those two together, it was like, oh, yes, you're a really good teacher without teaching in this book. Like, I can tell you're a really good teacher. And you could get the left brain psychologist in there and start telling us about consciousness and what was happening. But you literally bring it to life, the experience, the embodied experience to life through these words. So I'm curious if that capacity in you, Christina, as you're talking about the language and Paul's asking about different languages and the vibration of word. Did this capacity like turn on with you with this poetic, delicious, yummy use of words and language? Did it turn on after you began having these illuminations? Or is this something that's always been a part of who you are? And then it's come through language in the last decade or so.
Beautiful question. Beautiful question. It's always interesting in conversation in our world of duality, in the linear world, that we try to place things in a linear sequence. And this unfolding is probably more of a destiny that the mystery has nudged, meaning it wasn't sequential and it hasn't been linear. I have had a love, an absolute deep love of dead genius poets for 20 years. So before the illuminations ever began. And I'm somebody who I've been asked to do a spiritual book club in my 10 favorite books. And I'm like, I might only read 3 books a year. And almost all books, if the first 30 pages doesn't move my sensory system, I put them down. And I always go back to my dog-eared, torn genius poets who write a line that transports my consciousness and that I have the felt sense in the body of being transported into a larger awareness. So that's been part of this destiny. And then the illuminations occurred. And then, of course, in the book, there's the near-death experience where suddenly out of the blue, I'm having a conversation with the living light behind the word and saying, it's time for you to do what you're here to do, be a mouthpiece. And I, at that time, was clueless. I'm like, I have no idea what that means. And I might follow it up with emptiness. With that near-death experience, I lost the 2 people who meant the most to me in a very short period of time. And after being a meditator since 1991, I don't know how long that is. I've been meditating for a long time. You know, we're always looking for emptiness, but you can't stop emptiness. Emptiness arrives, and it arrived for me in that moment. Because everything I was doing at the time, teaching, keynote addresses, workshops, writing books, meant nothing in that time. And in that emptiness of just no longer doing and coming to a place of being because I was convalescing, that is the place where I understood emptiness is an awareness that has no center. When you arrive at an awareness that has no center, there's no me cosmology anymore. There's no even working on a me any longer because you are in a we cosmology and you move differently in the world. And all of that was happening simultaneously to these illuminations that came during that 5-year period.
You know, I just want to jump in before we move on, and I'm really curious about the movement from the me cosmology to the we cosmology. Like, yes, you're speaking our language, and I can't wait to dig in. But you talk about the non-linear way that, like, yes, this was your destiny, and it's unfolding. So I'm going to take us back to that very first question when I was talking about the progressive attunements.
Yeah,
like you saw this as this progressive thing that. It was building, but it's like we noticed with our last guests, it was like over 30 years, the same kind of source was taking this client through this progressive attunement of learning. And it's like this thread that went through everything that didn't feel like they were separate at all. Like they weren't the non-linear part of what we're talking about. They weren't this linear, sequential, teachings, and they didn't really build on each other, but they completely built on each other and engulfed each other and became all one. Can you speak about that progressive attunement from your point of view?
Yeah, it's beautiful, isn't it? Because, you know, we live in a linear world. It's the linchpin of our existence. It's the cultural trance and the power lines we're living under, but we also are in the quantum soup and we're embedded in the quantum soup. So it's not an either or, it's a both and they're both happening simultaneously. And you just beautifully spoke to that. In these illuminations, well, I could say thank goodness for COVID in 2020, because it was shortly before COVID arrived that I actually realized maybe I should go back. I had the wherewithal to send to my editor the illuminations when they came in, because I had no conceptual understanding of them. Some of them were mathematical formulas, but they're in the felt sense of the body. So I just, after each one, I would bullet it and I would send it off to my editor. That is my Virgo linear psychologist self, and never looked at them again. Never looked at them again until they were complete. And one of the reasons I probably even went back to them was one of the final illuminations showed me 92 illuminations on my desk that were complete. And I'm like, wow, that's curious. All the while, over 5 years, I do think there was this progressive attunement of a sensory system that was deepening and growing. And I might just throw out a wild notion here, because Paul, you're here. I wonder if this is a part of evolution. Language, of course, is a part of evolution. And I was having a communion with it. We know with the new humans and the neurodivergence on the planet, the direct perception, the telepathy, that it's there and available. We also know with neurodivergence, it's not adaptive. And I feel as though there is an evolution going on. And in that 5-year period, with this progressive transformation, there was perhaps an evolutionary pathway. From the reptilian brain to the limbic system to the neocortex, putting all of the neurodendritic field together in the body, awakening the quantum soup, and boom, another possibility for human beings.
Yeah, I was very much having those same sort of thoughts as you were, Julie, obviously, from your introductory remarks about we humans are beginning to unfold new capacities. And there's a lot of commonalities amongst certain descriptions of those new capacities from person to person, although each person's path is rather unique. Certainly your path, Christine, as you described through living language, I've not come across that before. And I was appreciating your description earlier about this sense of loss of a center. And that reminded me of some of Bernadette Roberts' work, who is a former Catholic nun in a convent. Mm. And she described her journey through different levels of illumination and the loss of self. But of course, that's always a paradoxical way of stating it, because so much is gained. And I appreciated how you wrote about that. And I want to read this one sentence where you said that you no longer feel compelled to deal with your own thoughts, or even tinker so much with your life circumstances, for you have a new dynamic at work that is within you. All you need to do is accept the discoveries that come along and let them flourish. And I thought that was so beautiful, because for me, that is the direction each individual human being must go, and humanity itself. And so many people are seeking that, seeking ways to be much more receptive to divine inspiration, divine guidance, to be, let go more and more of kind of these small self mind oriented ways of living, and just breaking out of that. And I'd love you to speak a little bit more of that, if you can, particularly And it is everyone's own path, but ways that you have found that help people discover and have confidence in this new way of being, how to get there and to cultivate it.
Well, you know, it's interesting because I've been a spiritual teacher for 30 years until 2017, again, in this time period where I just felt complete. I felt complete, and I love teaching. I absolutely love teaching. But why I felt complete was that also in this shift, transformation, I no longer have any beliefs. And I'm not interested in beliefs. They are just separating agents. I can always play in a good belief, and I could play both sides of a belief, but I'm really no longer able to have the juice behind one to actually teach it. So it's a conundrum to sit in community and love my community, but I'm not really behind the teaching per se, which brought me to a close for the time being until I feel called again to teach. In all of my teachings, moving from doing to being and to an appreciation and a larger relationship with silence has always been important, because I really feel, one, we live in a really noisy culture that is all about doing. How are you doing? What are you doing? You know, all of our questions, the whole perceptual filter is toward doing. And as soon as you go, well, how are you being? How is it that you are being? People are like, which I think is what has to deepen this place where you're not, what falls away, falls away, becomes untethered, moves out, is the old conditioning of ambition and success and being defined by, you know, the next marker that you're moving toward in a linear world, and just simply being, really opening that spaciousness and space, which allows, I think, the experience of, I could say it in different ways, quantum entanglement, participatory experience with the unit of consciousness. That is the space and place it arises from. And it's just a different language. They're both beautiful, right? They're both beautiful. They're all from the source. But if one is truly looking to expand awareness, to awaken, to have an experience with unity consciousness, for the most part, you have to move out of doing and begin to pursue being.
You know, there's a little bit more to that I want to deepen into, because this this idea of the doing to the being is really, as you're developing this new capacity, others are falling away, like you're talking about. We're so linear and in the mind. And here's two quotes. First, you wrote, "The glue of duality is dissolving and something else is replacing it. An unsettling yet nourishing perception." Mm-hmm. So then fast forward to this. You go on to say, "Using my mind to conceptualize feels increasingly like trying to herd feral cats. My connection with concepts has gone barren." And I had this experience in 2021 where literally I lost time, space, capacity, where like this whole experience post COVID that I was in, literally it was like, wow, I loved not caring. And I don't mean that in a negative way of not caring. I didn't care about time, space. I didn't care about expectations. I didn't care about the way life used to be. It was like this, all these new capacities were emerging. And when you talk about that, like trying to herd feral cats, it's like something takes back seat, but it's not a huge loss, is it? Christina, I'm curious if you're seeing it as like, I know there are times where I'm like disorganized and can't get stuff done and don't prioritize like I would normally have prioritized. because I'm fully in the beingness of
the being. Yes, yes.
So like, and we're talking about these new capacities of us being as we're becoming. Like it's not a fake it till you make it kind of thing. It's really we're being it as we're becoming it more. So I'm curious about the capacities that are no longer front seat. As those listening to us are trying to go, wow, something new's coming and maybe I won't have the capacity to do what I've always done and I do so well.
Right.
Can you talk about that a little bit more?
Mm-hmm. Yes, yes. What I would say is our conceptual mind in the world of duality is our mother language. So even though it recedes in order to have an experience of greater awareness, a transcendent experience, even though it recedes, it is our mother language. And we don't lose a mother language. We learn to speak another language. And that's what I feel being in the unit of experience and no longer conceptualizing is. It's a second language as it's embodied and it grows and it has its own organic development. You can move judiciously through the world because the conceptual mind will always be there when it's needed. But as you come more into fully being, you recognize everything you need is in that moment. And what's extraordinary about that moment is that the eternal is also in the moment. And you can still speak and you can still answer a question. And you can still, even though it might be coming from someone who's speaking the mother language from a place of duality. And as a therapist, I love sitting with souls. I deeply love sitting with souls in their duality and experience and just widening that consciousness and that lens so that they can have another experience.
That's a beautiful description. I so appreciate it. And the need for it, really. But and it also, it does seem paradoxical to people. And as you're speaking, it's reminding me of a consciousness of the Lord Shiva in the Hindu tradition.
Mm.
Words associated with that are often nowhere to go, nothing to do, no one to be.
Oh, I love it.
It is. It's a beautiful, almost a foundational state of consciousness. But if we hear that from our mind, it can raise a lot of questions. Well, how am I going to do anything if I'm no one doing nothing? It gets back to this loss of the center, the loss of a kind of an apparent individuated identity and loosening it up to a whole different type of, well, it's often called a witnessing consciousness, which is sort of fair enough, but it's not a detached, it's deeply immersed, as you were saying, Christina.
Yes, it's participatory. It's participatory in the one.
And soulful and beautiful. So again, thinking to your listeners and how to encourage people to have a sense of comfort as these things begin to emerge in their own consciousness and not to shy away from them too much, but to explore and allow these kind of future human, as Julie, you were saying earlier, attributes begin to emerge in us more and more.
Oh, my mind is going in many different directions with this question. I'm thinking, Paul, I'm assuming you're a baby boomer. I'm a baby boomer. Mm-hmm. We are baby boomers, and we are absolutely the height of a fundament of value based on productivity, success. If I work, then I'll have success. Then I have value in the culture. You know, we are the first generation that works 60-hour weeks because of that value and that fundament. And yet we have now these Gen Z millennials, but Gen Z, who the fundament of their value is completely different. They're like, I want to work remote. I would rather choose a place in the world to live and then decide what I'm going to do. And I don't need to be anyone in the world. I don't want to work for 40 years doing the same job. I want well-being and to enjoy life. And so we're starting to see in the quantum soup, in the generations, this shift, this fundamental shift in what was once valued, which is, for those of us who are baby boomers, is conditioned and has been the norm. But here's the beauty. Gen Z, the millennials, and underneath them, the new Omega, they are not breathing any energy into the old, which means the old can fall away. There's no energy to support it any longer. And so anyone who is trying to have a different experience and awareness, it is easier now because there isn't a wind of generations underneath that have that same fundament of value. So I think this is the time. It's easier now than ever. And yet it's not. There's nothing ever easy about giving up deeply, deeply, deeply conditioned ways. And longtime meditators know it. They know when they get to that place of emptiness, there's like the sentinel comes up and goes, wait, 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 I need, you know, and then they have to work through and massage the resistance. And that would be my suggestion for everyone, that every time that resistance comes up, we have to ask the poignant question, do you want to continue in the direction you're going? Or do you want to massage and untether these old ways and have compassion and patience for the untethering as the resistance comes up from within?
Great. I love it.
That just makes me want to explore more, Christina. Just listening to you, I'm thinking about you working with humanity's evolving consciousness, and you bring up these generational pieces, which are also age pieces in our development as humans. And a lot of times we don't learn about the spiritual development of humanity or this evolutionary new capacity that's coming online during these times. You're talking about, like, we're talking about real evolution, like in real time, conscious evolution. So as you talk about that, I'm like curious if you are seeing anything different. We know these young children are being born with new capacities that we can't imagine. My little six-year-old granddaughter just got a device, and it's a listening device, but it's teaching her Spanish. Like, she hopped in the car on the day of her birthday to go out to eat and got this new birthday present and puts in this card, and she's learning Spanish in the car as she's driving 20 minutes. You know, it's like, wow, a six-year-old. And she's like, really speaking it beautifully.
Right. I love neuroplasticity. Love it. Love it. Love it.
Yeah. Isn't that amazing? So I'm curious what you're seeing as far as these generations and as age related, like, are Gen X, Gen Ys, Gen Z, and like, are they, do they have a head start? Are, like, I always say, I think that all my grandbabies are born with brand new capacities. I see it in them that we just haven't had, or they haven't came online. So what are you seeing when you bring in this generational conversation? Because I think it's fascinating.
When I sit with my 19 to 24 year olds, and particularly when I sat with them through COVID, it was an interesting time because they couldn't be with their friends. They were isolated. And so at a time where they would be doing groupthink and moving into that hubris of a public self, they were unable to do that, which allowed them to begin to move into their inner sanctuary, drop that hubris, and think about what was important and of value to them. And I found that very interesting. You rarely get that with the younger generation. But again, it's this confluence of what's going on in the on the earth right now. And it was a moment. And what I've also noticed is as I continue to work with them, the fundament of their value is still trying to emerge. And it's very different from baby boomers and Generation X. They don't want to work 40 hours a week for the rest of their lives. They want well-being. They want joy. They want to figure out a way to be in the world that allows for this. And much of how I sit with them is interacting between them and their parents who are putting pressure on them to be a part of an old fundament of which they are completely resistant to. And it leads to feelings of inadequacy because they can't move there. So it's an interesting time, but what it does tell me is that the new human is coming onto the planet. It's coming onto the planet through this generation, but it's also coming onto the planet with the neurodivergent and the autism spectrum. The nonverbal speakers with autism, now that they have letterboarding and they can speak, well, suddenly 15... And I have a 24-year-old young East Indian man who wrote me because of the book, because they feel it speaks their language. But they have telepathic skills. They know several languages they were never introduced to as non-speakers throughout their entire young adolescent life. We know they have super sensory experience. This is part of the evolution. It's part of the mutation and evolution. And sometimes it's adaptive and sometimes it's not, because this super sensory receptive experience has to evolve. And yet, Homo erectus had it. And then we developed our neocortex and our executive functioning, and it receded and moved away. But is this a time and a possibility where that connection is starting to happen again, which brings us back to that intuitive knowledge of living at one in the earth while also being able to conceptualize?
Speaking further about that, this idea of the new human. And I don't have this experience of living language as you described it, so I'm trying to get a better hold of it. But also in the context of, let's imagine we're in the future now, quite some distance, and there are more and more of the new human beings alive here on the planet. And I'm wondering, how might your experience or anyone's experience of living language and all of the facets and, let's say, benefits and profundities of it be different in a future humanity as we've evolved closer to the divinity, closer to being full mirrors? Can you speak to that a bit?
Well, this is the conundrum. As much as I'm a mouthpiece for living language, if we take this out further in evolution, is there a possibility of a post-literate species that is just simply more telepathic and more attuned from a sensory experience? Is there a full circle that may happen? Possibility. It's a possibility. Mm-hmm. What I would say with living language, and what I value most about it, is that who knew language, the spoken and written word, no spiritual dogma could bring awakening to unity consciousness? That is a new idea in and of itself.
Hmm. I'm thinking of those who now can just pick up a text and, you know, I'm going to pick up your book as I'm talking. It's like, pick up your text and really receive the essence of the message.
Yes.
From that, which is a new innate capacity. Like, so to bring in the idea of illiterate is like, I think that would scare many people to go, oh my gosh,
post,
you know,
post-literate, not illiterate, post-literate.
Thank you for saying that. Post. Thank you for saying that.
And we don't even know what that means. We don't know what that means.
Yes. I'm so glad you said that. And brings me back to that post-literate, because it's not illiterate. It's a capacity beyond literate that is coming in, and all of the telepathic. I think we haven't even seen the crux of it. Someone in your book that I think you mentioned, this gentleman, when you were talking a minute ago, you asked him, do you know of anyone who has had persistent mystical experiences that seem to have come from an invisible hand with a governing aim? And you asked that, and it was like, okay, this is a really good question. I'm going to ask you that, Christina. But I want to just, the last five or six words, I think, are fascinating with this question. So I'm going to ask you, are you aware of others now? You've published this book. I'm sure other people are starting to talk to you and wanting to share. But you say, from an invisible hand, beautiful, like we've kind of mentioned that a couple times here, with a governing aim. It's almost like this is evolutionary. This is the evolutionary impulse moving us forward with a governing aim at these capacities. So I'm curious,
oh,
do you know
beautiful.
Of anyone?
Julie, that's beautiful. That's beautiful. And
okay,
the question.
Yes. So do you know of anybody with these persistent mystical experiences that have seemed to come from this place with this governing aim?
I know I've had that experience. Do I know of others who have? No. And we know there's someone in history that can speak to this, but I'm not a historian. And Michael Spite, who is really well read in world religion, didn't come to mind anyone he could talk about. And yet I am sure there is a mystic out there in our 17th, 18th, 19th, 20th century that was holding the lantern in evolution for this to occur.
As you were speaking, Christine, I was scanning my own thoughts, and I'm not aware of anyone. As I said earlier, reading your book, this is new to me, all new territory.
Yeah, yes. We know they're out there because the unseen seeds, and it fertilizes the soil, and it does it for centuries. We do know they're out there. I'm not a historian, so I'm unaware of who they are. And it's interesting, Paul, you don't know who they are either, and Michael didn't either. But I know they're out there.
I think it's going to be the common folk. I think, you know, I think about different people that I know having persistent mystical experiences. You know, it's like we're starting to talk about it. We're starting, like, the aim of the show was to normalize the non-ordinary.
I love
that. We've been in the closet for so long.
I love that.
And those having these experiences haven't felt the freedom to just share and to talk about it because of literally, you know, being crazy or losing their job or not knowing anyone else who's had an experience like this. So
losing respect.
Yes. As we move into the we cosmology that you talk about, Christina, I think we're going to learn more and more of those who have been with us all along. And as we look at even just the beautiful literature of Christian mystics, and I'm just thinking of many of them that have spoken through this, what we might interpret from their words and language as we really go to review it again when we're in the we cosmology, because I think it's going to come through the us of us and not the I of us. And so as we begin to come into collectives and really share in the we spaces, we're going to learn more and more all the time.
You know, Julie, this reminds me, Evelyn Underhill's book, Mysticism, which is an extraordinary text. You know, it's just, it's so historic in understanding mysticism. And she does a beautiful job of quoting many of the mystics through spiritual awakening and consciousness. And one of the things she says, and this book was written, what, in the early 1900s, probably. And the mystics, of course, are, you know, from centuries. But what I read in there, which was interesting, was one, the mystics always had their central nervous system had a high acuity, and they were exceedingly sensitive, nervous, anxious, exceedingly sensitive. And also with visions or auto clearance, often would go into cataplexy. The physical body would go to that place where it completely shut down. We see that in schizophrenia all the time. But you begin to also see where this sensory acuity is growing. The muscle of it is growing so we can be adaptive and functioning in our world. Whereas in the early stages, that level of taking in all is one, all is God, all is coming in, would shut the nervous system completely down. So I've noted that.
Yeah, that brings me to a question, Christina, for you is even with those who've had near-death experiences, I had an early childhood near-death experience, and I'll when I talk about it, people will go, well, I didn't have that kind of experience. I didn't have that opening with my experience. I didn't have, you know, so even those who've had an experience like that have differing results to the central nervous system, to the way of viewing the world, their worldview. So I'm curious if you have any reflections on that, like, what is that innate capacity that really grasps these experiences and wants to go more into expanded consciousness? And what is it, as a psychologist in you, what is it that perhaps resists or repels it, or is frightened and closed down? I'm just curious if you have any of that experience.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. You know, I do a lot of end of life practice, you know, sitting with people who are at the end of life. And there are people who die with great grace and get on the runway to get out of here, drop the body, and can move over that threshold and that spirit and surrender into that great bath of consciousness. And then there are more who that fight between spirit and body and matter and fear of leaving makes it more difficult. And I would say with anyone voyaging in consciousness, the task at hand is to keep massaging away that fear and surrender into this greater bath of consciousness. But at the end of the day, I think it's fear that doesn't allow someone to make this transition easily.
Christina, when you were speaking about the book on mysticism and these characteristics of saints who have historically had a lot of mystical experiences and their sensitivities, even towards anxiety and so forth, compared to most people at the time, there are many people who feel that at the current generations we have, there are many more so-called highly sensitive people, high sensitives or empaths. And I'm wondering if their increasing presence in the population is part of this foundational change towards the new human, because what you're saying earlier, people like that there's a vulnerability indeed, but they also have more capacity to tune in and mirror and model some of these other faculties and experiences, including the mystical.
It's beautifully said, Paul. It's beautifully said. You know, I'd be curious about the increase of children we diagnose, consider on the spectrum, and neurodivergence. And is there indeed an increase, or are we just getting better aware at understanding and labeling it? But I do think there is an increase. And it's more evidence that the new humans are coming onto the planet. And they don't even have to be neurodivergent. You know, I speak about in Living Language, a gymnast, right? High level gymnast going to the Olympics has a closed head injury, which she can no longer move her life in that direction. I'm counseling her into the next stage in her life. And she, at the very end session, said to me, when I said, "Do you feel you're ready now to go back to college and to take an exam?" And she said, "Yes, Christina, I've never studied because I just listened to the sound of each of the multiple choice answers and I know which one is true with the question." That is somebody who's quite adaptive. And when I asked her, "Well, can you do that with a comprehensive exam?" She said, "Yes, it's the same thing." She says, "I know I sound really crazy." And I'm like, "Well, is it a sound underneath a sound?" And she's like, "Yes. Yes, that's exactly what it is." And I'm like, "Yep, I think you're crazy." I think you're crazy. And I think you're going to be fine. So I think it's here. I just think it's here. It's here amongst us, which is a beautiful thing.
Yeah. I loved that example. The two clients that you shared back to back, right at that space of just bringing on those new capacities. Like I mentioned in the introduction, it's fun to listen to people who you know, before as a psychotherapist, we would have went, "Oh, you know, don't share that with a lot of people."
Right.
And now we're talking about it. Let us talk about it.
Let us talk. Let us joke. Let us, yes, yes.
Let's play in this, mm-hmm. right? Let's mm-hmm. play. Let's play bigger in it. And yeah, Christina, this was delightful. Thank you. I have more questions I didn't get to, and we could go on for hours here, but thank you so much for joining us and bringing this wisdom to us with the Main Street Mystic series.
I loved having this interview. I'm so sorry for all of these interruptions. I'm not sure what our major interruption was. And the two of you together are an exquisite duo that our world needs. So thank you so much, because you are a beautiful tandem together.
Thank you, Christina.
Yeah, thank you for saying that. And thank you, Paul. It was fun again.
Absolutely, Julie. See you next week.
We will. And yes, and listeners, thank you for joining us. Thank you for tuning in. And we look forward to bringing you season 2. I want to leave you with the words of Christina. Human consciousness advances not linearly, but in unforeseen leaps, in revelatory epiphanies experienced one person at a time, often quietly in the margins of life. I'm Julie Kroll. You've been listening to the Dr. Julie Show, All Things Connected. This is our Main Street Mystic Series with co-host Paul J. Mills. Remember, together we are creating connections for the good of the whole. Until next time, we're sending you a world of love. If you enjoyed the show, go to your favorite podcast platform. Remember to subscribe, rate, and leave us a review. Also, please consider supporting the Dr. Julie Show at patreon.com/allthingsconnected. When we each give a little, we all get a little more. You can stay in touch with me at juliekrollemail.com. Thanks for listening.